Hugo Chavez has been governing Venezuela for the last month from a hospital bed in Cuba. We're joined now by Nicholas Kozloff, author of the book Hugo Chavez, Oil, Politics, and the Challenge to the United States, for a look at the Chavez presidency and how he's maintained his grip on power despite being hundreds of miles away. And that's on our second backstory segment today. Welcome back to our show.
Thanks for having me.
How much do we know about Chavez's condition?
Well, officially, Chavez says that he's been suffering from something called a pelvic abscess, which sounds minor enough, but there's some confusion about how debilitating his illness might be. And throughout Venezuela, there's a widespread rumor that he might have prostate cancer, in which case that would have severe implications for the 2012 election. And also, I think, geopolitical implications if Chavez can't run. Because one of the shortcomings of Bolivarian Revolution in Venezuela is that Chavez has just not groomed a successor. There's been a lot of, I would say, exceeding narcissistic attention on the charismatic leader. And as a result, Chavez hasn't groomed a successor. So if Chavez's illness is more debilitating than is commonly let on, then I think this could have severe political implications.
So he kind of imagined himself as president for life?
Well, perhaps. He recently passed a measure that allows for unlimited term limits. So he came to power in 98. He's been elected to 2 6-year terms. If he's elected in 2012, that would be another 6-year term. So that would be 18 years in power. That would be a dynasty. Mm-hmm. And so he survived numerous political threats, including the 2002 coup, which was linked to the United States and the Bush administration, an oil lockout in 2003-2004, a recall referendum. And so he's a political survivor. But I think this illness puts a big question mark over the Bolivarian Revolution. And I believe that even if he recovers, there are some structural limitations to the populist model. And so I could go into that.
Well, hasn't his brother taken over many of the duties of the president? Is this a situation similar to Fidel and Raul Castro?
Well, I think there are some parallels. Adán Chávez is Hugo's older brother. He's the governor of the western state of Barinas. But
he's a scientist, isn't he, not a politician?
Yeah, but he doesn't have the same charisma or stature as Hugo. And so I think there are some parallels. Perhaps if Hugo should falter, then Adán could take up the mantle of the Bolivarian Revolution, much as Raúl did once Fidel became ill in Cuba. But I think the problem is that it's difficult to imagine the Bolivarian Revolution without Hugo Chavez. He really personifies it. And whether it's Adán Chavez or Rafael Ramirez, the energy minister, or some other people that have been mentioned as possible stand-ins, none of them have that kind of stature. And I think this is the whole problem from the outset of the Bolivarian Revolution, that Chavez has encouraged this charismatic leadership, and that's one of the characteristics of populism in Latin America. There's a lot of symbolism, and the charismatic leader tries to bind the people to his style of leadership. There's a lot of symbolic rallies. In my second book, I talk about how the color red is a symbolic marker of political identity in Venezuela. And so when you go to a Chavez rally, you have the Chavez faithful all dressed in the color red. And so there's a lot of symbolism. There's a lot of media PR where Chavez goes on. He has his own talk show and a TV show where he takes calls from around the country. This is another characteristic of populism going way back.
That's how Alo Presidente, right?
Yeah, it's very important to demonstrate that you are close to the people, even if you're not. It's very important to have that illusion, and that's been a characteristic of populism, you know, going back to the Mexican Revolution.
So who's hosting the weekly television show Alo Presidente while he's away?
Actually, I don't really know. And in fact, Chavez has been quite an avid Twitterer, and for some days now he hasn't been tweeting, and I think he just started tweeting again, but it raises the question of, well, who is really running the country? And so the opposition, which has been very fractured, has taken advantage of this, made a lot of political hay out of this incident, and said, well, look, he's incapacitated. We need to start talking about who is going to be a replacement. And under the Venezuelan constitution, that should be the vice president, but the vice president doesn't have the same kind of stature and charisma as Chavez. So, like I said, I think this has thrown up a question mark over the Bolivarian Revolution. And so if Chavez can't stand for election, then what should befall the Bolivarian Revolution? What would be the international ripple effects on South America? My personal view is that even though Hugo Chavez has a number of personal shortcomings, I've criticized him, for example, on the issue of foreign policy quite scathingly. But whatever your personal feelings about Hugo Chavez, I think that it would be a very negative development if the Bolivarian Revolution was derailed.
Well, the Financial Times drew a parallel between Chavez's absence and Venezuelan President Cipriani Castro, who left for Germany to receive medical treatment in 1908, only to be overthrown in a coup while he was gone. They suggested that history might repeat itself in 2011.
Yeah, that is actually an interesting comparison. I wrote my dissertation about back in grad school about the Juan Vicente Gomez period, 1908 to 1935. And actually, Gomez, a military dictator, took power in Venezuela with the assistance of U.S. military gunboats. This was during the era of Theodore Roosevelt. And so at the time, Cipriano Castro was suffering from a debilitating illness abroad, and Gomez, with the aid of the United States, took over. And so I think it is an interesting comparison. Hopefully, the opposition won't take over much as they attempted to do in 2002 with the help of the United States. But perhaps we could see history repeating itself.
Well, the United States did that partly because they wanted to build the Panama Canal, no? Or was that more a Colombian involvement?
Well, this was in 1908, so I think this would have been after the Panama Canal.
My guest is Nicholas Kozloff, who is the author of a book called Hugo Chavez, Oil Politics and the Challenge to the United States. Why did he have to travel to Cuba for medical treatment? Aren't there good doctors in Venezuela, or couldn't specialists be brought in?
Well, that's a good question. I think my understanding was that he was in the midst of a tour and he was already in Cuba. So I'm not clear of the chronology, but perhaps he fell ill and then he just happened to find himself in Cuba and then just availed himself of the Cuban medical system. But as you know, going way back, there's been this interesting exchange between Cuba and Venezuela, whereby Venezuela ships discounted oil to Cuba in exchange for Cuban doctors, which have fanned out all across the Venezuelan countryside and who have provided medical assistance to the needy in Venezuela. And so getting back to this political crisis, I think one of the potential effects might be that Cuba might be more isolated. So if Chavez should vanish from the scene or should falter in some way, then it's difficult to imagine a scenario in which another government that comes to power in Venezuela would be nearly as friendly to Cuba as Chavez has been.
You mentioned the red shirts that people wear, a symbol of the left. What is Chavez's ideology? Does he call himself a socialist?
Well, I think that my personal feeling is that 21st century socialism, which is his slogan, is a rather incoherent ideology. I think that there are socialistic programs in Venezuela, anti-poverty programs, but then you could say in the United States there are potentially socialistic programs as the legacy of the New Deal in this country. So I wouldn't say that there is socialism in Venezuela, although that's somewhat debatable, but I think that Venezuela is a land of contradictions. So even as you have these anti-poverty programs and the various mission programs stressing education and health, there's capitalism is still thriving. And in fact, there's this crony bourgeois class that has risen up and which has benefited from Chavez's own rule. So there's a lot of ironies and contradictions in Venezuela today. And I think as a result, from an ideological perspective, it's Venezuela has not been able to propose a very convincing ideological model for some other Latin American countries. And so I think that that is definitely a shortcoming. My personal view is that the Bolivarian Revolution needs to entrench itself, but get away from this charismatic populist style of leadership and entrench some of the more popular democracy measures, and then maybe push forward with interesting international initiatives like the Sucre, which would be an alternative currency to the U.S. dollar, and the ALBA initiative, which is reciprocal exchanges between countries outside of the normal corporate trade. I think all of those are for the better. I think if the Bolivarian Revolution would concentrate a lot more on those kinds of measures and get away from this charismatic populist style of leadership, then that would be great progress for the left. My concern, however, is that there's been exceeding attention towards this cult of personality, for lack of a better way of stating it. And I think that that's very, as a result, it's very easily, the Bolivarian Revolution could be very easily derailed if Chavez should vanish from the scene.
Well, the 2011 Human Rights Watch report on Venezuela says, quote, without judicial checks on its action, President Hugo Chavez's government has systematically undermined journalistic freedom of expression, workers' freedom of association, and the ability of human rights groups to promote human rights. It's also harassed political opponents. So why do you say that it would be unfortunate if the Bolivarian Revolution failed? Sounds to me like it's kind of failing, at least as a democratic, it's failing democracy as it is.
Well, I think that it's been a mixed bag. I think I certainly applaud worker-owned cooperatives, for example. I think the communal councils that provide greater grassroots democracy at the local level are all for the better. But I think I have a lot of concerns about this exceeding attention paid to the charismatic leader. And I think there are millions of people that hang on Chavez every word. They tune in to Hello President, his TV show, and they accept his word as the Bible. And I think Chavez has not groomed a successor. So my concern is that the opposition will not necessarily field a very right-wing candidate. The candidate will have the trappings of Chavez, will be Chavez light, and then all of the positive developments of the Bolivarian Revolution will be derailed. Right now, there's a figure named Capriles Rondonsky. He's the governor of Miranda State, just bordering Caracas. And he's a very charismatic young figure in the opposition, up-and-coming figure. And he has essentially recognized that, well, if you can't beat him, join him, because there's a reason why Chavez is so popular amongst the poor. He has anti-poverty programs. So Capriles Rondonsky has embraced some of the same measures as governor, and perhaps not as radical as Chavez. But so I think that in this sense, the Bolivarian Revolution could be derailed, not necessarily by a really right-wing ideologue, but by someone who is has that same kind of folksy demeanor and that appeal to the masses, but who would severely dilute a lot of the positive accomplishments of recent years.
Does his criticism of the United States add to his popularity? WikiLeaks. People will remember that when he appeared at the UN in 2006, he called George W. Bush the devil, claimed the podium still smelled of sulfur. Sounds a bit eccentric, kind of like similar in style to Ahmadinejad's. Add to that the fact that he, as you mentioned, he twitters extensively, and last year he live tweeted his experience exhuming the body of Simon Bolivar, who's been dead for 200 years. He ordered the tomb open and then live-tweeted it?
Yeah, I think that the anti-U.S. sentiment plays well amongst a certain segment of the population. It's actually a little ironic because if you go to Venezuela, it's probably one of the more culturally one of the countries that's most has the greatest cultural affinity to the U.S. In a lot of ways. You have Venezuela and baseball and a lot of cultural influence on the United States. But at the same time, I think that historically there's been profound, Venezuelan nationalism against the U.S. oil companies, and I think Chavez has played that card very well.
And he claimed that the United States played a role in overthrowing him when he's removed from power in 2002.
Right, and so Chavez can point to the opposition, which is really fractured and discredited, and say that the United States is aiding the opposition, and so as a result, the opposition doesn't have a lot of standing. However, I think that there is a bit of Chavez fatigue. Don't forget, he's been in power for 12 years, and it's rather tiring. There's this ongoing political polarization, and I think there is there are some economic problems. I mean, there's been economic growth in the country in recent months, and oil prices are high, but there's been inflation, and also the bolivar was just the bolivar, the Venezuelan currency, was just devalued, and a lot of longstanding problems, corruption and the housing problem, haven't been resolved, and so I think it's difficult to maintain that kind of political enthusiasm over 12 years. He's a great political survivor, but I think if he doesn't address a lot of these structural problems with his regime, then the Bolivarian Revolution, again, could be derailed. And I think that that would be very, whatever your personal criticisms of Chavez, I think that would be very negative for wider South America, because in other countries you've had the rise of this pink tide, the pink tide leftist regimes in Ecuador, Argentina, Brazil. And so, in a sense, Venezuela was the ringleader. And so if there's an ideological vacuum or Chavez is replaced, that would be a severe psychological blow.
Now, Nicholas, we have very little time, but WikiLeaks cables have also revealed that Catholic bishops in Venezuela were involved in the coup attempt in 2002, but he's encouraged evangelical Christians. Is that in an attempt to counterbalance the power of the Catholic Church?
Yeah, I think that's really true. Unlike Central America, where you had liberation theology and Oscar Romero and more liberal-minded Catholic bishops, Venezuela it was really the opposite. It had really, really conservative cardinals and archbishops. And reportedly, one of the upper Catholic hierarchy lent his own house to the coup plotters, the anti-Chavez coup plotters in 2002. So there's been this...
Nicholas, we have to end it there, unfortunately.
Okay.
we've just run out of time. Nicholas Kozloff is the author of Hugo Chavez, Oil, Politics, and the Challenge to the United States. Thank you so much for being with us again.
All right. Thank you.